are genuine issues on all the claims, but I'd first like to address the whereby clause of Claims 17 and 39. The district court ruled that a whereby clause that merely states a result of foregoing steps in the claim is not a limitation that can be ignored. This, however, is contrary to this court's precedent and long history of cases addressing whereby clauses. The proper analysis is the whereby clause that merely states the result of the inherent result of the foregoing claim limitations can be ignored. But a whereby clause that goes beyond that.
What does this add?
This whereby clause adds at least two limitations. It adds a timing limitation whereby subscribers can be informed when a specified portion of the information database will be received. Thus, you have to generate and decode timestamps before the reference portion is received. Otherwise, it doesn't inform subscribers when the reference portion will be received. The other thing the whereby clause adds is
I don't quite understand that. I mean, obviously, the other side is saying this is a natural, an inherent result. So, of course, it's going to be after that.
No, I think the other...
The only reason you decode is to find out the time, in other words.
Yeah, the reason you decode is to find out the time, but that has to be communicated before the information is received in order to give advance notice. In other words, the purpose of this is to give advance notice of when something's going to be transmitted. The other side is saying that it's only... Well, our position that if the whereby clause only recited an inherent limitation in the claim, that would be the case. This case provides for a number of options, only one of which is recited in the whereby clause. And that's why the whereby clause goes beyond that and limits the claim to that particular instance recited in the whereby clause.
Does the fact that the whereby clause has this permissive word can, which is typically not... allowed as a claim limitation, does that influence how we construe the whereby clause here?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor, because that merely distinguishes from the situation of actually informing subscribers, having a person that actually has to receive notice. That distinguishes that situation where this provides that notice and irrespective of whether the subscriber actually sees the notice. Now, the other point, the other restriction added by the whereby clause is that the capability recited in the whereby clause has to flow from the foregoing limitations. Now, when this whereby clause has always been treated as limitation throughout this case, and even going back to the prosecution history of the 505 patent, the whereby clause was rejected.
Let me ask you a question. I really don't understand most of your arguments about the whereby clause. But nonetheless, let me ask you if you think this one is correct, which the one thing when I read this whereby clause that made me pause and think maybe it was a limitation was because it does, while it might state intended purpose, it does more than that. It articulates another step in the method, the step being that the subscriber must have access. It's kind of like, suppose the claim was, make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, spread peanut butter on one piece, spread bread on the other, you've got a sandwich, whereby a person can eat it, whereby a person will eat it, whereby it will be eaten. The eaten part is clearly another step in the method. I mean, you've got a peanut butter and jelly sandwich sitting there, but it doesn't mean someone's going to eat it. And so I guess my question to you is this,
why do you get a show if you're not going to watch it? Why do you make a peanut butter jelly sandwich if you're not going to eat it? It seems to me like it's just telling you what you already know, right?
Let me try this. The whereby clause says that subscribers can be informed when a specified portion of the database will be received. So another option would be that subscribers can be informed when a show is received, and subscribers can be informed when a show was received. All those flow from the prior limitations, but the fact that this whereby clause limits it to giving advance notice rather than concurrent notice or past notice.
Why are you interested on something that happened in the past and you can't observe anyway?
I'm not saying that a subscriber would necessarily be interested. Often we're interested in things that happened in the past. But the point is, that shows that this whereby clause is not the only result flowing from the prior limitations. In other words, it's restricted to that one case, which further restricts the claim.
Okay.
And that's why it's a limitation.
You didn't bite on my argument, but I'm going to try one more time anyway. So my argument was, or my thinking, my concern is that maybe this whereby clause, perhaps there are a million reasons why you might want to decode the timestamp, because maybe the computer will use it internally for something else, scheduling transmissions, doing things, but not necessarily making it available to the subscriber. And making it available to the subscriber, making it so that the subscriber can access it right on the screen, is a separate kind of almost structural component of the claim.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Well, the point is, that's something not required by the prior elements. That's something that's added, which is why it restricts.
Well, let me ask you, before you get to the whereby clause, all the prior elements, once you've completed those steps, it is accessible to the subscriber.
Yes.
Nothing more. There's not another step that's required to make it successful.
Wait, why isn't
it? No, let me retract that. It's not necessarily. The only way it becomes accessible to the subscriber is by decoding the timestamp to make it accessible. Well, by sending the timestamp information in advance, decoding it to give the subscriber advance notice of when something is going to be received.
Well, so it says the final step is said method including decoding said timestamps and said indices at said subscriber stations. So at that point, having completed that step, it's accessible to the subscriber, right?
Yeah, there's two things that have to happen. You have to give notice when something's going to be received, and then you have to send the item that about which notice is being provided. And if we send the notice in advance of the item, that's what the whereby clause is talking about, versus sending those simultaneously, which is what the prior art does. And that's why it distinguishes from the prior art.
I'm not understanding your response to Judge Prost either. I understand her to be clearly saying to you, does decoding necessarily mean availability to subscriber? Because my response to that would have been a resounding no, and I would have thought that's what you would have said. And instead you said yeah, and then said a bunch of other stuff I didn't get. So... Does decoding necessarily mean people have access to it? It's decoded inside the computer.
Right.
So isn't the whereby step the only one?
The point I think both of you are making is that there are a number of things added by this whereby clause
that are not inherent in the prior claim limitations.
apart from the ones that I've focused on. And when this whereby clause is properly construed as a limitation, we see that it distinguishes the prior art. The prior art Jexy textbook, for example, sends the time code with the page it's identified. So it only provides simultaneous notice of when something's going to be received. It doesn't provide advance notice. Thus, the capability in the whereby clause is not satisfied by the prior art. And that's why it's distinguished. And the same is true with the other art cited by DirecTV. When we get to the Roizen art, for example, in the obviousness case, there is no... Well, let me go back to Jexy. DirecTV says that, well, you could put an indication on the menu page that the when something is going to be received, but that is not a timestamp that has been decoded to provide that notification. There's no timestamp underneath that menu item, and that's why there's no anticipation there. I see I just have a couple of minutes before I get into my rebuttal time. I want to just note that this whereby clause has always been treated as a limitation in this claim, both in the prosecution history and throughout the history of this case.
The PTO rejected it as indefinite, and then because it didn't distinguish prior art, it's really not really material to patentability either, is it?
Well, I would take issue with that. I think under Festo, it's regarded as that type of rejection would be regarded as a limitation. That would give rise to some estoppel effects. Here, if it had no limiting effects, the PTO, or the applicant, at least in response to that rejection, could have just canceled the claim language. Instead, the applicant went to the trouble to amend the claim language to overcome that indefiniteness rejection and ensure that that language was in the whereby clause.
Can I just ask